people that are against gay marriage, if they just openly said, I'm against gay marriage because thinking about two men having butt sex or two women having scissor sex kills my boner, dries up my vagina. I can't have sex, it ruins my life. That's why I'm against it. That would be a valid argument. We'd have to actually debate you on that. But these lunatics always go, well, because it says in the Bible. Okay, stop, hang on. I'm glad you like a book. I really am. I'm glad that... At this point, I'm glad anybody's reading anything. And I'm not even putting it in the Bible. The Bible is terrific. Give it a read. It's got monsters and adventures and... And hey, if you like torture porn, check out the Old Testament. Oh, man. Any Saw fans out there? Woo! Get the Old Testament. But just because you like something in a book doesn't mean you can have the thing you like in the book happen in real life. That's what crazy people want. I can't go to the White House with a bunch of Green Lantern comics and go, I want a Green Lantern ring!
Welcome to the after party.
Curl your hand around a frosted glass of vodka. This is the Bob and Chez Show.
The after party with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
After midnight. Is that too on the nose? Is the song too on the nose to go?
Pretty much.
I think so. What can I say? We're recording the after party a little early, so my judgment isn't quite all there yet. I haven't had enough coffee yet. So, following up a Patton Oswalt gay marriage bit with Judas Priest,
right?
On the nose is what they say. Yeah, what can I do? Sorry.
I'm ugly. I stink. I love Satan. I killed my baby.
Oh, Alex. Waste of space.
So, speaking of Patton, we never talked about Patton's wife, which...
Which happened actually after the after party last week.
After we got finished. What bizarre... I mean, as if there weren't enough deaths... like celebrity deaths this year and even going back into 2015. This was completely unexpected. Do we know what happened to Patton's wife? All we know at this point, from what I'm aware of, is that she died in her sleep.
Yes.
There's no other information.
They don't know how or why. And I mean, it's crushing because, number one, if you watch his... I mean, he's mentioned Michelle throughout his... interviews and throughout his stand-up. Obviously he's also mentioned his daughter. But it's crushing because if you watch the new stand-up special, especially, he really, really talks quite a bit about his family, and it just hurts so bad to know that happened to him. Because, honestly... For everybody out there, anybody who's ever like listened to Patton, listened to his stand-up, or read his Twitter feed or whatever, and thought, "I'll bet he's a really nice guy," that doesn't even begin to cut it.
Yeah,
Patton is one of the warmest, most genuinely good people around. He is a genuinely terrific guy. He really is. He's been a friend to the banter for a while, and he's been, he's been sort of like a friend slash acquaintance to me. I mean, he's been really good when it comes to the stuff that I write, and I've met him and gotten big hugs from him. I mean, he's a really, really terrific guy.
Yeah, not a surprise based on the Daily Banter's content that Patton Oswalt and Bill Maher are like the biggest celebrity fans of that website.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be pretty clear. But, I mean, it's really sad because you think of someone who's as nice as that and just and as talented as Patton Oswalt is, and then to imagine him waking up on that morning to find his wife dead in bed, I assume, in bed next to him. I don't know if he was there. I guess he was there at the time.
I don't know. I assume so, because he had a obviously he was in town because he had a comedy show at Largo, which is over on La Cienega, a couple of days later. I mean, he had a comedy show scheduled for Sunday.
Which he obviously didn't do. And then
he has a show there every month called Patton Oswalt and Friends, and both this month and next month have been canceled.
So what usually is the cause of death in a situation like that, where you have a woman in her mid-40s, no known ailments that we're aware of, at least publicly, waking up, and well, not waking up after dying in her sleep. I mean, what usually?
Congenital heart defect? I mean, brain aneurysm? I don't know. I genuinely feel bad even sitting here talking about it, because I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I thought of was maybe some sort of binge drinking, or I don't know what. I mean, what would make you pass out asleep and then not wake up? I mean,
they're a pretty tame family. I mean, they really are. I mean, at least as far as I know. I'm not saying that I know Michelle, but everything I ever heard about them is, they're for a long time, I think they live in a new place now, but for a long time they lived in Burbank, just suburbia for LA. So
yeah, well, he's got Pixar money now.
So yeah, and they can live anywhere. I mean, they've got a 7-year-old daughter as well. Yeah. They got a daughter who's Inara's age, and it just that again crushes me.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. So our condolences going out to Patton Oswalt and his family, and especially his daughter. Oh my God. Yeah. It's again in keeping with our ongoing Bob and Chez Get Old kind of ongoing bit, is that these were a couple of people in their mid-40s. Exactly where we are in our mid-40s. And then you hear about Prince, who is 10, 12 years older than we are. And I just realized, I came to the realization last night that I'm coming up on 15 years away from being 60. Just the whole idea that I'm 15 years away from being 60 is terrifying to me. I mean, it's like 15 years. 15 years isn't that long a period of time. It's like basically 3+ presidential administrations. That's how I blocked gaps of time like that out, by presidential administrations. I used to be, when I was a kid, it used to be Olympics. How many Olympics to go before I'm this many? But now it's presidential administration. So really terrifying stuff. And that kind of dovetails into the topic of your Banter Magazine article this week, which was, I just read it this morning, and I was sucked in. Really, really compelling stuff. If you're not a Banter subscriber, go over and subscribe just to read Chez's Banter Magazine piece about.
Well, yeah, but I can get away with this one time. Also, in a very kind move by Ben Cohen, our publisher, he allowed me to cross post it, so you can also read it for free at the lights have come back on at deusexmalcontent.com. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, my blog is kind of alive again, at least for a little bit. But I decided to cross post it there because I felt like it was the kind of thing. First of all, it's the piece deals with the 10-year anniversary of the brain tumor I had removed.
The anniversary was April 25th, right?
April 25th,
2006.
Is when the surgery was. So, it's the blog started, my entire online writing career started because of that surgery, because I had time off from CNN and I needed something to fill my time. So a friend of mine had a blog that I read regularly, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do what he did. So I felt it was a good idea to that's a good place to sort of turn the lights back on DXM for a little bit. So you can read it there too. But it's pretty personal.
And I was reading through it. I remembered, I sort of flashback to the first time you and I were ever on a podcast together, which was with now Breitbart minion Lee Stranahan.
That's right.
And Lee Stranahan, when he was a progressive, he and I used to do a show on Blog Talk Radio. Whereas basically him, and then I would just come on and provide like sort of, I was the Chez of that show.
Yes.
And so that we had you on, you talked about why you were let go from CNN and the brain tumor and all of that. It was just a fascinating hour of podcasting, and then reading this brought me right back to that. And then I this is the way my fucked up brain works. I have all kinds of interesting, or not even, no, I take that back. They're not interesting questions. They're just questions I have about an interesting procedure to me, which is the fact that they went in and took out this pinball-sized tumor and a good portion of your pituitary gland through your nose.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
And you kind of skimmed over the recovery phase. You were in the hospital for five days.
The only reason I skimmed over the initial recovery phase is that I've actually written about it before.
Oh, right.
I wrote about it probably about 6 months after the blog started.
Yep.
In a piece called I published it. Put it this way: if you want to read it, you can go back to www.deusexmalcontent.com. Believe it or not, that makes a difference because I've always had issues with people not, like, for some reason, the if you just put it without the www, that it doesn't hit. It's just
so weird.
I've been meaning to change it. Damn it! But either way. If you Google, you know, Deus Ex Malcontent, and I think it's Where Is My Mind, you'll get, like, every year for a long time on the anniversary, I publish these two pieces together, and they get into they actually gloss over the diagnosis, which is what I got into with this piece, and they get much more into the recovery procedure and what it was like and that first night in recovery and just, you know, just everything. So
I guess my first question regarding the recovery was if they went in through your nose, that had to have been fucking horrendous in the recovery, because in your nose is all fucked up, isn't it? You must have had sutures up there and just like a gauze packed in. I mean, it must have been awful.
It's horrific. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you don't, and the shitty thing is, like, when they first bring you out, it's like, I wasn't awake for any of it, so I didn't realize what they'd done.
Oh, so they didn't keep you awake. I thought with brain surgeries, when they go in and they
they knock me the fuck out.
Okay. I thought they kept you awake because they want to make sure you don't lose your ability to see or move your right arm or whatever.
They tested me for that as soon as I got out. They asked me to go through a bunch of sort of motor skills.
Yeah. I mean, this is what scares the shit out of me about brain surgery is the fact that they do keep you awake in a lot of cases. I don't want to be fucking awake while they're carving into my brain.
No, they knocked me out. The last thing I remember was, you know, because I was terrified. And the last thing I remember was, like, you know, okay, we're going to give you something to calm you. And that was it. Right. And then the next thing I remember was, you know, the gurney hitting the double doors as they pushed me through. I don't think I realized that at the time that my sinuses were packed with gauze. Mm-hmm. But until they pulled it out, which was just, you know, terrifying.
God. Oh, my God. That must have been fucking awful. Can you imagine what the look of what the gauze looked like and then the other shit that probably came out with it?
Yeah, I know. It's just the whole thing was like, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they tell you, obviously, I was in secondary recovery with somebody who had the surgery that I was initially going to get, which is where they cut your head open. I will take quote unquote non-invasive over that any day of the week.
Yeah.
But don't make no mistakes. It's not non-invasive. I mean, they still go into your fucking head and it's still horrific. And even though it's not, you know, a month of getting over it, it's still a good amount of time. It's still several days. And obviously what happens to you afterwards is all kinds of bizarre shit. So,
Jesus. So, I mean, you were able to you couldn't breathe through your nose while I had all that shit packed up in there. Did you ever feel, because to me, when I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking I would be totally claustrophobic if I had something in my nose that I couldn't breathe, and that would make me feel like I was suffocating. Did you get that sensation at all, or did they have you hepped up on so many painkiller meds and everything like that that you didn't really experience any sort of discomfort or anxiety about it?
No, I mean, I was terrified. The first night, I mean, you know, going into the surgery sucks because they keep you, like, very much awake. It's not you, they walk you in.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they put you on this, like, this cross, this, like, fucking transom type thing in the middle of the in the middle of the surgical theater.
Yeah.
And it's just terrifying. Theater. And I'm whimpering, and I'm just like, please give me something to put me out. Like, I don't want to experience it.
Yeah. And I mean, were you terrified that you weren't going to be fully out by the time they started cutting into your nose?
No. I wasn't worried about it. But, I mean, no. my first night in recovery was a disaster. I mean, it was just, like, it was awful.
Well, and I mean, what were you experiencing? Because you wrote that in your piece about it. But what were you experiencing in that first night of your recovery?
Well, again, the piece I elaborated on the first night in recovery in the piece for Deus Ex Malcontent that's run several times. Again, that's why I didn't really get into it. But it just, you know, they put me in a dark room, and this is Cornell Medical Center, so I'm kind of overlooking, you know, the 59th Street Bridge,
yeah,
which is a very nice view, and I'm alone. And they had one nurse who would come and attend to me every once in a while. And it was just, I couldn't sleep because I've got, you know, all these tubes in me, and I've got, you know, the things around the inflatable things around your calves that inflate every once in a while to make sure that, you know, you don't get blood clots.
Right.
And I was cold. I was freezing. And no matter how many blankets they put on me, I couldn't get warm. It just, and I, you know, and again, I couldn't sleep, and I was just counting the seconds, you know, I mean, I watched the sun come.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, over the East River. And it was the whole thing. The whole night was just awful. Was the single, probably the single worst night of my life. And I think that's why something I didn't put in the piece yesterday was that, you know, I had to go in for a 10-year MRI, a 10-year checkup, because pituitary tumors grow back.
Yeah.
They grow back quite often. And I went in, and I'm just, I mean, I've been terrified. I'm not going to lie. I've been terrified to go in. Because
when did you do this? You did this, what, last week or this week?
Oh, just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay. All right. That's what I was getting at.
And, you know, and I was terrified. They gave me an MRI, and I'm just like, this sucks. and it turns out I'm fine.
That's great.
I'm tumor-free, which is good, because I don't ever want to go through that shit again. Uh-huh. Ever.
Right.
Ever want to go through that.
And did they ever tell you what the cause was? I mean, was it genetic? Was it something that was caused by drug abuse? I mean, what was going on? It just magically appeared. It just didn't, they couldn't determine the cause.
It takes years. It just happens. Yeah. I know it's, you know, it's not common, but relatively common. It can happen. And it's, yeah, it's just, you know, it's really very, yeah, it's just kind of a scary, scary thing. I mean, as for what caused it to bleed, that I have no idea. I mean, I don't, you know, God only knows. But I remember, you know, I remember what happened. I went out to dinner with Drew Curtis from Fark.com on a Sunday night. And it was a bunch of us. And, you know, we had an amazing time and drank. And we went to Kraft in New York City, Colicchio's restaurant.
Yeah.
And, had a great meal, and it was a terrific time. Went back home, and the next day, my head just kind of started hurting a little bit. And by, you know, maybe 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, I just had to tell CNN, I'm like, I need to go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that night was, I mean, just excruciating pain. And I'm like, all right, I can go to the hospital now. And if I do, it's like I'll sit there in pain. Better I just wait. I have an appointment with my doctor tomorrow morning for some other thing. I think it was like I got a cold or something. Anyway, so let me just wait. And I went in, and she, of course, was like, you know, she immediately looked at me and thought, you know, drug seeking behavior.
yeah.
And I'm like, fuck you.
You mentioned that you told your doctor about the heroin going in. So then they're
never doing that again.
I have right. Note to everyone listening, if you have an addiction, don't tell your doctor because they won't give you pain meds.
Yep. No doctor I've ever had since have I told about the fact that I did heroin because I never want to be in that position again where I'm not, oh my God, we can't give you painkillers. Fuck you. If I'm in pain, you're going to give me fucking painkillers.
Yeah, really? I mean,
so she gave me codeine, and all that did honestly was make me tired and in pain. You know, I still couldn't go to sleep. I still felt like shit. So I just, you know, fucking just had, you know, dealt with it for a day. And then when it didn't go away, I called again, and I'm like, you need to schedule me for an MRI. She schedules me for an MRI, and He schedules me for an MRI, and I go in. I bother to like go into Manhattan. I'm like in yeah. such excruciating pain. And I get there, and they fucked it up, and she scheduled me for the wrong day. So I had to go back the next day.
Oh, no.
So another day of being in like fucking pain.
And you've got to drive out to what, like New Jersey or something like that?
No. I actually, you know, I'm not going to fucking lie. I took CNN's car. I called the town car service, and I'm like, fuck this. This is a good excuse for me to use it.
Why not?
I'll talk to my boss in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, went in and got the MRI, and they're like, and it was shitty because there's a friend of mine who like strolled into town who I hadn't seen in years. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen in fucking years.
Yeah.
You know, actually, for anybody who's read the book, Apex happened to be in town. Anybody who's read the book knows we had a falling out during the drug years because I was an asshole. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't talked to him in so long. You know, he and I like had kind of kept each other at arm's length. And then he comes into town and he's just like, hey, man, you know, I'd like to get together. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And the whole week I have to keep putting it off because I'm in such pain.
Jesus.
And finally he's like, I'm like, look, I got to come into town for an MRI. I'm like, no matter what. I said, go to where Jane works because my wife at the time worked at a restaurant in Midtown. I'm like, go to where she works, sit at the bar. I'm like, no matter what, I don't care how much pain I'm in, I will come by and see you afterwards. So I, I go get the MRI and the guy tells me, he's like, you have a tumor. And I just take a cab to like this restaurant and I walk in. This guy hasn't seen me in like, not 10 years. The guy hadn't seen me in like probably about 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And I just walk in and I look at him and Jane. I'm like, I have a brain tumor.
Jesus Christ.
And Jane, of course, Jane lost her fucking mind.
Yeah, so. And they didn't know from the MRI whether or not it's cancer. So they're just...
No, he had a pretty good idea because most pituitary tumors are not cancerous.
Oh, they're really? Pretty... So he said that to you during the diagnosis, like, this is very likely not cancer or we don't know.
Well, he's not supposed to give me a diagnosis, but, okay. You know, I guess he just did me a favor. But I walk out. Yeah, I walk out. Everything I do very slowly because I'm in fucking pain.
Yeah, of course.
And he just says, he's like, I can tell you exactly what's wrong with you. I can tell you what's wrong with you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you got a tumor in your head. It's about that big. And I'm like,
that big.
Why? And Jesus I just said, Christ. I'm like, am I going to die? He says, no, probably not. He's like, it's probably not cancerous, but you need to go to Cornell Medical Center immediately. They're like, call your doctor. He says, call your doctor. You know, I'll send over the paperwork, you know, and send over the MRI and let her know what's wrong. And we're going to, you know, you need to get to Cornell. And sure enough, you know, I stopped off at the restaurant, said hey, and then I'm like, I'm going to Cornell Medical Center now.
Did they have a sense how long that thing was growing inside of your brain?
Yeah, it was several years, which wow. is interesting because that provides to me the knowledge that that was there and was fucking with my hormones provides it allowed me to see some of my behavior from maybe 2000 on, you know, maybe even earlier through a very different lens.
Really?
You know, it made me go back and read the book mm-hmm. and say like, wow, okay, you know what? I had violent mood swings.
Yeah.
I reacted to things badly. I had times when I was really down and times when I was really up. And a lot of it, even though I'm, you know, I have clinical depression, you know, and that can be, you know, you can have some mood swings with that occasionally.
Sure.
Not like this. So mm-hmm. that very well, I don't want to take the blame off myself. You know, I'm very big on being responsible for my actions.
Yeah.
But I thought about that. I'm like, there's a very strong possibility, especially for those of you who've read the book, one very particular part that I am not proud of. You know, I would love to be able to deny and say isn't me. And no, it was, you know, I take responsibility for it, but there is a strong possibility that my very sort of angry reaction was caused by everything that was going on in my head at the time, or how partially caused.
Yeah. Now was that all getting worse as time went on, as you got closer yes. and closer to realizing that you had a tumor in there?
Yeah, it's not a tumor.
Right. So it was, your behavior was becoming more and more, I don't know, for lack of a better term, erratic as time went on.
It would be, I had some issues. I had some pretty serious, you know, ups and downs. And then the other thing I had was, you know, I started to get sort of like night blindness, which is what happens is, pituitary tumors start to affect your, they start to push against your optic nerve. And so you get sort of tunnel vision. And that's, I didn't see it during the day, but if I went into like a subway station, I could see it. I could see sort of darkness around the edge of my eyes.
Oh no. Oh, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. Okay, if you remember last summer, I went in and got an eye exam because I needed a new pair of fucking glasses. And I noticed maybe, God, back in 2003 or so, that when I went into a movie theater, it was like really bright sunlight outside. And then when I went into a movie theater, my left eye didn't adjust to the darkness at the same rate that my right eye did. So my left eye looked really dark. Everything looked really dark out of my left eye, but my right eye was just fine. And now I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, is that a tumor?
It's not a tumor.
Might be a tumor. I don't know. But this is, so that now that's scaring the shit out of me. Now that you mentioned the tunnel vision thing, which I didn't know about until you just mentioned it just now. So thank you. Thank you for making my weekend, Chess Bezzi.
Well, then go, you know, fuck it. Go in and get an MRI. I'm sure it's nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
There are especially when you hit your 40s, there are plenty of reasons that you can have that happen.
Yeah. Well, it still happens to this day. I mean, it hasn't gotten worse. I don't know that it's necessarily affected my mood, so who knows? It may not actually be a tumor.
It's not a tumor.
Thank you. Okay. That puts my mind at rest. But anyway, so you were saying, so you were getting tunnel vision. And no, it was like at night, just exclusively at night. So you would get up in the middle of the night and you would walk around and you couldn't see properly.
No. Yeah. I mean, it was hard to explain. I mean, it wasn't a real major issue. It wasn't the kind of thing where I'm like, all right, there's a real problem. I just figured I was getting older. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's honestly half the problem with this shit. I mean, that's the issue that I had when I considered sort of my draining testosterone. I'm like, well, look, I am 46.
Yeah, right.
And your testosterone naturally drops and you get older.
Oh, yeah.
So I could never process sort of what was just naturally getting older and what was a byproduct years later of this thing that I had happen to me.
Yeah. Now, what exactly made you wait so long to revisit the hormone replacement therapy that you were under? I mean, what finally frustrated you to say, what the fuck? Enough of this. This is not working. I got to go see a doctor again.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I think you recently made the decision to switch out, like, gel for the injections, and the HGH is now added. I think basically you switched endocrinologists, right? You started going to someone new. You didn't have insurance.
Yeah.
So that was the turning point. Once you were able to get insurance, and it was because of, I assume, because of Obamacare and the pre-existing conditions and everything like that that's included in Obamacare, that you were finally able to get insurance? Or was it a matter of finances on top of that? I mean, what was preventing you from getting insurance? And what made you finally able to get it?
Obamacare.
Obamacare.
Yeah, and I also, you know, I live in California. We have Medi-Cal. So you can get relatively inexpensive insurance. And right. I went in and, you know, I went into my doctor, who, by the way, my doctor is not fucking spectacular.
Yeah.
But, you know, but he said, he's like, all right, I need to send you to, you know, a specialist before I prescribe you anything. So we're going to send you to an endocrinologist. Great. He sends me to an endocrinologist, which is what I needed. And she's fucking like just totally no nonsense.
Yeah, I was just going to say, no, not.
She
gave, sounds
she
like
gave me a blood
article.
Test and she's just like, you have the testosterone of an 11-year-old girl. You're an idiot for letting it get this way.
And no, so when you hear that, do you go, well, there's the problem? Or do you go, oh, shit, what the fuck?
No, I mean, she's right. I'm an idiot. And the other issue with me was that, you know, I for a while, I mean, she asked me what pills I used to be on. And I admit I let some of my pills lapse. I did because, again, I didn't have insurance. And, you know, for a while I was going to a clinic and having them prescribe what they could. But after a while, they're like, look, we can't do this anymore. We need you to see an actual doctor.
Right.
And so when that stopped, there were several months there where I didn't take pills. And she said, she's like, well, what were you on before? So, well, I was on thyroid medication. I was on Synthroid. It's synthetic thyroid. I said, you know, I was on hydrocortisone. And she just, you know, she said, she's like, you stop taking hydrocortisone. Because hydrocortisone is one of two hormones you need in your body to live. If you don't take it, you will die.
Yeah. And you would stop taking it. And why did you stop taking it? Because you just couldn't afford it?
Well, I couldn't afford it. But the other thing was that she gave me, you know, the last blood test I had taken actually said that I didn't need it anymore, which is very odd because it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
But she did give me a blood test and she said, no, you don't need hydrocortisone. She's like, but you do need this other shit. And I'm like, well, what about Androgel? And she's like, no, Andrew, because Andrew, dude, first of all, I don't know what this fucking, what testosterone shots cost because this shit's free for me, for my insurance. But Androgel is fucking ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, it is really expensive.
Androgel is like $400 for a month's supply.
Yeah, it's insane. From what I've read, it doesn't really even work. After a while, Androgel starts to, when it goes in through your skin, it starts to metabolize into estrogen, which is not what you want.
Yeah,
if you're
either way,
a guy.
She's like, that's not going to work. So we're going to give you, you know, we're going to give you testosterone shots. Testosterone mixed with HGH.
Yeah,
which is awesome. HGH, Jesus Christ.
And so, yeah, that's interesting to me too. That she also prescribed HGH. And
yeah,
what was
just a little bit, not a ton. I'm not getting like the daily shots or any of that shit.
And what's has she mentioned what the intent of that is?
Yeah, it's to make me basically bring me back to life.
Yeah.
Like she said, she needs to kickstart my system.
Right. So that actually initiates what? The hair growth that you used to have, things like that. Because you talk about
all of it. I mean, all of it is a byproduct of both of those, especially, you know, testosterone in your body is what, you know, puts hair on your body.
Of course, yeah.
So I, you know, when I wasn't using it, I'm just like, oh, look, I have, you know, I should go ride a cycle competitively because I have no hair on my legs. This is awesome. But yeah, but it's like, you know, but it sucked. I didn't feel like me. I was fucking sluggish. I felt like shit. It was a doughy piece of shit. And then, you know, and then I took these and like one fucking shot. And I just suddenly it's like, hey, the Hulk has been hit with gamma rays.
Incredible.
I'm gonna go outside into traffic and start throwing cars or like fucking immediately.
Yeah.
It's just holy crap. What a rush.
Right. And you referred to yourself as Brundle Chess, which I thought was a funny reference.
Yes. But there I am, you know. So since then it's been... you know, it's good. It's just a weird fucking thing.
Yeah.
Because there's something kind of relaxing and calming and centering about not wanting to fuck all the time.
Sure.
It really is. You know, it just, you know, I don't like that. I don't like being a slave to anything.
Yeah. Because it becomes a need. And you touched on this in your article. It really, really is a need. And then you have to stack that up with everything else that you need in your life, like eating and sleeping and going to the bathroom and all of that. You got to throw something else in there because it's like an itch that you have to scratch. And if you don't scratch it, it's not going to go away. It's just going to keep itching. And that's got to be extraordinarily frustrating. And of course, those of us who have lived through puberty and being in our 20s know what that is exactly like. And it's not always the fun that it might seem, I guess. That's what you're kind of saying, that it's just like the need becomes overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, fascinating, man. I mean, I'm happy for you. I'm happy you've made it another 10 years and there are no complications. After 10 years, it's not coming back and you seem to be getting everything squared away.
Trying.
And no more tumor. No,
it's not a tumor.
I don't know. I might have a tumor.
The thing
with me is I'm terrified of the MRI machine. That's my problem. I don't want to get
an MRI. Yeah, I know. I'm not like, it's funny because the last time I had, I got an MRI afterwards and I know I got one later. But like the last time I really had an MRI that I remember well is when I was all fucked up. I was in so much pain, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I'm like, so you're going to slide me into a coffin? Don't give a shit.
That's
but
right.
This time I was like, you know, I mean, I'm okay with MRIs only because I just keep my eyes closed. You know, they put me in and I'm like, all right, fine. I'm going to close my eyes. Because if I do open my eyes, I'm gonna feel like fucking Andy Dufresne crawling through a pipe full of shit.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Like, you know, it's like I'm not claustrophobic, but there are two scenes in movies that just fucking make me like just make ants crawl on my skin.
Yeah.
One is Andy Dufresne crawling through the pipe and the other is Bishop crawling through the pipe in Aliens.
Oh, well, see the other
one. I'm like, fuck no, he can't even move and he can't get out and like, oh my God, like that makes me insane.
Well, the other thing for me is Uma Thurman in Kill Bill Part 2, Buried Alive.
Yeah, oh, the buried
she's
alive
in that
thing
fucking coffin.
Totally irrational fear, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so if I do, you know what? If I end up with a tumor.
It's not a tumor.
Probably isn't. I'm going to make sure I get this guy to operate on it.
Oh boy, yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny? if right. after all of this
he
time.
He doesn't actually put you under anesthesia. He just talks to you. Just talks to you for a little bit.
Just
are
as I'm going.
Are you ready to go under? Are you ready? Okay, let me talk to you. Let me tell you about my economic plan for the country.
Right, and just as you're about to phase out, as about to your lapse into unconsciousness, suddenly hear Dr. Ben Carson say,
yeah, heard about what you were saying on your podcast about me.
Right.
Really funny impression you do there, Mr. Seska, Mr. Pazienza. You're hysterical. Now we're just going to cut into your head and play around with your brain a little bit.
You're like, oh my God! Somebody wake me up. All right. So moving along here, just get some politics in here. Another Republican admitted to the real purpose of voter ID. This keeps happening. They keep spilling the beans. This time around is Jim DeMint, former South Carolina senator, Tea Party firebrand. He's the president of the Heritage Foundation now. And he's the latest in a string of conservatives to admit that restrictive voting laws, such as voter ID requirements, are an attempt to help Republicans win elections. He said that, let me see here. DeMint talked about voter ID laws, said it's something we're working on all over the country. Because in the states where they do have voter ID laws, you've seen, actually, elections begin to change towards more conservative candidates. And there it is. There's the whole purpose. Voter ID laws disenfranchise Democrats. That's the bottom line. So we thank all of our Republican friends for letting us know the real purpose. Of course, it's never going to stop these things from being passed. They're going to continue to be passed, and we're going to continue to have to fight against them, even though they're admitting the real reason is not voter fraud. It's electing more conservatives. God damn it. Meanwhile, I noticed this. I noticed this posted on your Facebook feed. And I'm saying this on the after party because I don't want to get into trouble because I write for this publication. I write for Salon.com. They provide a significant chunk of my monthly income. But I wonder about articles like this. And God damn it. I'm not gonna blame Salon. This
then
is just
no bullshit. Yes, you know. You know what? Let me do it for you.
Okay, so
Salon fucking sucks. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. They have like maybe two or three people left who are any good, of which you are one. And everything else is just a giant pile of shit. The idea that they continue to run H.A. Goodman and that fucking idiot Walker Bragman, just the nonsense clickbait from those two.
I'm wondering
is just disturbing.
I think Walter Bragman is a pseudonym. I don't even think that's a real person. There's no byline at the end. There's no bio. There's, of course, a byline. But Walker Bragman? That doesn't seem real to me. But H.A. Goodman's latest is at the top of the most read list. That pisses me off.
Of course it is. Of course it is because it's and that's why they run it, because it's fucking clickbait.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are like many, many publications. They are having a hell of a time paying their bills. And that's the fact.
I know,
that's the fact. They just laid off six of their senior most editors.
But there are other ways to do it.
Yeah.
There are other ways to do it without compromising your credibility.
So,
and Salon has for so long said they may as well put it on the masthead. We will compromise our credibility. We will run bullshit identity politics pieces just to get people to hate read, because that's all this is good for. Yeah. You know, you get because fucking every time H.A. Goodman publishes a piece, there are like 2,000 comments from people going, fuck you. Why are you publishing this?
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's always a place for all kinds of points of view in
but
a publication.
That's nonsense.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what H.A. Goodman
he's
is doing.
Not, he's not offering an opinion. He's literally spouting just absolute fucking lunacy.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, and then that brings us to this Walker Bragman article. But the Bragman, that's my favorite. My least favorite superhero is the Bragman. The headline is, a liberal case for Donald Trump, the lesser of two evils, is not all that clear, not at all clear in 2016. That's the headline. And basically, Walter Bragman makes a case for liberals to vote for Donald Trump in the general election. And he presents, what is it, three or four arguments here. The first one is he'll change the conversation. I'm not quite sure the conversation needed to be changed. But he goes on to say, like Bernie Sanders, Trump is neither beholden to special interests nor coordinating with a super PAC. This alone sets him apart from the other candidates in the race, especially Hillary Clinton. If he wins the presidency, it will send shockwaves through our political system, much like what would happen if Bernie Sanders were elected, but with a twist. Trump's brand of populism has been enabled by roughly a 40-year decline of our middle class that both parties have facilitated through the abandonment of Franklin D. Roosevelt in favor of Ronald Reagan. And guess what? Trump isn't going to have anything to do with doing that. Trump will be basically a turnkey for the Republican Congress. So whatever the Republican Congress passes, that becomes Trump's agenda. Because none of what Trump actually wants is going to get passed. He's just going to be, that's the problem. He's just going to be a blank check for every fucked up thing that Ted Cruz and the Republicans and Paul Ryan want, whether it's privatizing Social Security or, of course, repealing Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You do know what Walter Brueggemann has written, right?
No, what's his story?
Walter Brueggemann is the fucking giant idiot behind that piece, I'm a millennial and I refuse to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, is that the guy?
That Salon okay. also ran.
All right.
Yeah, so he's basically Goodman Light.
Yeah.
He's all about the politics of nihilism and destruction. And you know what? Fuck it. If we vote for Donald Trump, it brings in the glorious revolution.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will tell you this. I just want to circle back to this for a second with regard to Salon and the editorial choices they're making. You know, there was one article I wrote that wasn't really anti-Bernie, but they wrote a headline for it that made it sound like it was anti-Bernie. So I don't know that they're necessarily peddling an agenda here. I just think they're looking to make ends meet. I think they're looking to get some clicks. And as far as I'm concerned, the clicks that are being ascertained at Salon aren't nearly as egregious as some of the clicks that are being ascertained through some of the lower level sites that are just putting out flagrant clickbait and propaganda and basically fake news. I mean, essentially what it comes down to is fake news. So, I mean, I'm not going to necessarily target Salon here, but dig into this this awful Bragman piece, which is just a fucking atrocity.
But that's the problem. Yeah. That's, you know what, it's like when CNN used to fuck, or no, you know what, here's a good example. It's like the fact that certainly at Deus Ex Malcontent and probably at the Daily Badger too, I've spent far more time writing about NBC News than I have about Fox News. And the reason for that is that NBC News is supposed to be better.
Mm, yeah.
That's the issue. Fox News is expected to suck.
Yeah.
So when you go to like these tiny little sites that just publish, you know, nonstop propaganda, clickbait in terms of, hey, it's good news from the front for people who love any particular candidate. That's to be expected. That's basically like saying that the worst movie last year was some direct-to-video release.
Yeah.
You know, you expect that to be bad. The problem is that Salon is not supposed to be bad. And Salon used to be good years ago. And when I say years, I mean we have to skip past that entire era from maybe 2012 to 2015 when Salon was so much millennial identity politics bullshit.
You know,
but years ago, they were fucking great, man. I used to look up to everybody who wrote at Salon.
Let me ask you this. Has there always been this level of naivete on the progressive left? Because it's really starting to become clear over the last 3 years. And I really go back to 2013 as the benchmark for when I really started to notice it across the board, not just from fringe people like Glenn Greenwald and so forth. Because I'm reading this in this Bragman piece on Salon. Like, he writes here at the end of his number one, the first qualification for Trump as president. He said here, excusing the fact that Trump himself is a corporate interest, he would shake the current system to its core, which needs to happen. In what universe is that actually good? One. And two, who says he's going to shake the system to its core?
Well, I mean, because
to me, he's just as likely, again, to go on and just sign whatever the fucking congressional Republicans hand to him. It seems insanely naive. I just see so much, one, naivete going on the left, and then also, two, just the false, false reporting, and I'm seeing it more and more. And when it starts to pervade the Young Turks and everything like that too, where they have a gigantic platform and they're dealing in flagrant, obvious falsehoods. I just go, what the fuck is going on?
You know, I think twofold. First of all, to talk about your question of Salon doing what it does because it needs to get clicks. I get it. But what they're doing is a very short-sighted way of getting clicks. Because I do believe, honestly, that over time, Salon's audience that was very regular and very much respected it and would come back day after day after day, I think they're losing that. I think they're going to risk losing that more and more the more shit that they run.
Yeah.
That's first off. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think Salon has actually improved since last year? I guess it was last May that I started writing. I think since maybe 2014, there has been a considerable shift in its editorial direction. I mean, you remember the days of David Sirota and where Salon was basically David Sirota times 1,000. Like, there was it was that vibe throughout the entire publication, and now it's a lot different. It seems there are still some voices like Bragman and H.A. Goodman and so on, but it's not across the board. It's not. I mean, you still have Mary Elizabeth Williams. I'm in there now, and there are other writers who are. Amanda Turkle writes for Salon too. She's been doing a fine job with some really solid reporting. I don't know that it's all this, which is leads me back to the idea that I don't know if this is an editorial decision. I think this is just maybe a decision to get some things out there to cater to an emerging audience, which is the emerging sort of disaffected Bernie Sanders supporter. I think maybe there's a bit of that in there. I don't know. But this is, I mean, this is even beyond...
The naivete, though, is absolutely there because these are kids.
Yeah.
These are fucking millennials who have and when I say millennials, I don't mean the 30, 30-something millennials, 31, 32. I'm talking about, 20. I'm talking about 19 to 24, 25, who just don't have they got their fucking dick in their hand. They have no idea how politics works. Mm. They have no idea how the system works. They're still high on this idea that, oh, my God, you know what? If we'll just have this fucking revolution. Yeah. It's not how the system works in this country.
Well, here's a great example of that, which is number 4 on this Bragman list of reasons why liberals should support Trump, is he writes here, I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. That's his number 4 justification, which is like, well, because you're not afraid, that means that we're not all supposed to be afraid.
You know why you're not afraid? Because you're a fucking white guy.
It's privilege is why he's not afraid.
Yes, because you are a privileged prick. That's why. You're not someone who the politics of Donald Trump will directly affect. You're not someone who's an immigrant who Donald Trump has, whether he does it or not, has promised he will literally round up and fucking frog march out of the country.
Yeah. And even if he doesn't actually do any of that shit, even if he doesn't deport 12 million people, even if he doesn't build the fucking wall with the big beautiful door, the fact of the matter is that he's still going to authorize all the shit that the Republican Congress passes.
Yes. And he's created a country. He's created already a country where there is this unreal hostility toward immigrants.
Yeah.
And you think that if this guy fucking wins the presidency, that's going to be fucking codified.
Yeah, exactly. On top of that,
all of those assholes out there who think, fuck you, Mexican, and they go out and beat up fucking Mexicans. It doesn't happen all that often, but it does happen when, kids being fucking yelled at high school basketball games and shit. Suddenly that will receive sanction.
Yeah.
And that's an okay way to behave.
I mean, here's the ultimate irony in a Trump presidency, which is that Trump, as president, will absolutely nominate Supreme Court justices who will never in a million years overturn Citizens United. So for someone who is coming from a camp that is demanding campaign finance reform, getting money out of politics, etc., to then turn around and say, hey, you know what? Trump might not be all that bad. I'm not afraid of Donald Trump is bullshit, because any Supreme Court justice that he nominates is going to fuck up campaign finance for a generation. That Supreme Court will be there in place with a vast majority of conservative justices through the next generation, because we're talking about young guys or young jurists who are going to sit on that bench. And forget it. Forget, you want money out of politics? Forget it. It'll never be out of politics. It will only get worse, and it'll only get more entrenched with a Trump presidency. How can this possibly be a rational point of view for anyone on the left to have? And then I roll down to, speaking of the Supreme Court, to the second to last paragraph where Walter Bragman refers to the current Supreme Court nominee as Eric Garland.
Yep, that's how little you should take him seriously.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Eric Garland? It's Merrick Garland. I mean, there's Google. You can look this shit up. So, I mean, how do you take anything that he's written seriously if he refers to possibly the next Supreme Court justice by the wrong name? Or unless there is someone other, because there's some other guy named Eric who's up for the nomination.
Someone only Walter Bragman knows. Yeah. Did you see, by the way, that that C.J. Craig did the press briefing today at the White House? Allison Janney actually showed up as C.J. Craig and did the briefing.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I just brought that up. That's awesome. Up on my screen.
That's
here.
Really cool.
Yeah. It's very cool. I can't wait to watch this. I'm looking at the video right here. All right. So that's that. We're not going to be able to solve that problem anytime soon. But what we do know, in addition to everything else, is that evidently Trump was unable to get it up.
Oh, yeah.
According to...
Wow, I am shocked by that.
Yeah.
I am absolutely shocked by that that revelation that Trump has difficulty in the bedroom.
Yeah. According to a 1993 biography, Lost Tycoon, The Many Lives of Donald J. Trump, Donald Trump's then-wife, Ivana Trump, told her friends that Donald was skilled at erecting skyscrapers, but not much else. Ho-ho-ho. It's a nugget that received little notice at the time, but was recently reported on by Politico when they brought together Trump's biographers to discuss the man. Here's the block quote from Politico. Want to know where Donald Trump inherited his entrepreneurial bent? Gwenda Blair traces it to his grandfather, who ran a series of restaurants in the Klondike that featured some of the best food in town, as well as private areas where, quote-unquote, sporting ladies could, quote-unquote, entertain minors. Miners with an ERS, not ORS. Who was really doing the deals that made Trump famous? Wayne Barrett will tell you the only signature that really mattered on a contract belonged to Trump's father, Fred. What broke up Trump's first marriage? Harry Hurt III writes that Ivana, quote, confided to female friends that Donald had difficulty achieving and maintaining an erection. Well, that's quite a shocker. Yeah, so that's no surprise there. Meanwhile, I saw this article on Raw Story and had to bring it up for the after party before we wrap up here. The headline is Inside the Bizarre World of Mormon Porn, which is freaking out the church and Utah lawmakers. Evidently, there's a porn site called MormonGirls.com. Girls with a Z. The pornography site MormonGirls.com features these quote-unquote seed barriers calling young virgin women into their seed bearers, I guess those are the guys, calling young virgin women into their offices. Some have been caught kissing other women and are in need of some sort of forced recommitment to heterosexuality. Others are called to temple leaders' offices for secret sexual rituals. Some of the women even play the role of married Mormon women whose husbands must submit to the desire of the church to inseminate their women with this so-called sacred seed. The site finds countless ways to sexualize sacred religious practices, ceremonies, and leadership roles. They include a map here from Pornhub showing all the different states and what the primary search terms are from those states. And of course, Utah, the main search term in Utah is lesbian. Interesting ones. In Montana, and I believe that is Wyoming, the number one search term on Pornhub is stepsister. In Nebraska, the number one search term is cartoon. Also in Arkansas and Tennessee, porn seekers are searching for cartoon porn. Louisiana, it's black. In Mississippi, it's ebony.
Oh,
in
nice.
Georgia, it's ebony. Also, Ohio is also stepsister. South Dakota, stepmom is the big search term. Rhode Island, which just had a primary the other day, the number one search term is MILF.
No, number one search term is Bidondi.
Dan Bidondi. The other search term is... So Mormon porn at MormonGirls.com. And then there's that site was started by Mormon Brooke Hunter, who met her business partner, LeGrand Wolf, not his real name, founder of MormonBoys.com, when the two attended Brigham Young University. Like most Mormons, Wolf went on his mission trip in his late teens, but the time away from home helped him come to grips with his homosexuality. So Mormon Boys, like its sister site, features gay themes mixed with religious practices. They really know how to throw a party, don't they? The Mormons. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. All right. So, yeah, fuck it. I guess we'll just wrap up the show here. All right. That is the after party. Have a great weekend. And we will see you on the free show on Tuesday, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.